real know-it-all? Do you annoy your family by shouting the answers while watching Jeopardy? Do you drive people crazy when you start a sentence with, "Well, actually"? Well, guess what? You can go fact yourself. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Go Fact Yourself, the show where we take the smartest people we know and make them look dumb. And then smart again. I'm Helen Hong. And now, from the Angel City Brewery in downtown Los Angeles, here's our moderator, J. Keith Van Stratton.
Thank you, Helen. Thanks, everybody. Wow. What an enthusiastic crowd. Helen, how are you? This is our first taping after the holidays.
Yes.
Did you have a nice time during that time?
I got the...
Could I phrase that more awkwardly?
Yeah.
Did you have a nice time during the time when time happens?
I got what you were saying. Yep. I did so much traveling. I went from Boca... I performed in Boca Raton for the first time.
Uh-huh.
And they were lovely and ancient. Yeah, people in...
I believe that's what Boca Raton translates to. Yeah.
They were like, really lovely people, but yeah. They would come up to me after the show and be like, "We enjoyed you. We thought you were fun. We would have been laughing louder, but, you know, my sciatica."
So I'm guessing that was not at the late show.
There was no late show.
Yeah.
The shows were like at 5.
Yeah. I actually did not go anywhere, which seemed to surprise a lot of people because I do like to travel, and I had a couple weeks off.
You staycationed?
I stayed at home and did some did some cleaning up and some. I put up some shelves and I hung things, and then I got sick.
Me too.
I got very ill.
Yeah.
It turns out I'm allergic to not going on vacation.
Oh.
I'm allergic to not traveling.
Did your cat take care of you?
He took very good care of me.
Your cat?
That and some antibiotics. No. Uh-huh. He's awesome. That definitely was the advantage. I got some very good quality cookie time.
Yeah.
Cookie is my cat.
His cat is very cute, and if I was not deathly allergic,
right.
I would like to, yeah. We've never actually been face-to-face. I've seen Cookie from afar and been like, "Cute cat, please leave."
Yeah. You kind of get it. It's that plus cuddling.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. There's a little bit more to it than that, but those are his two best features, his looks and his soul. Today on Go Fact Yourself, two guests will compete to answer questions about facts they know, facts they might not know, and frankly, facts they should know. Plus, we'll meet actual experts on two very different topics, and finally, we'll declare one of our guests the winner of today's show. Let's get started and meet today's guest. Helen, who is up first?
She is a comedian, writer, and actress who was a cast member on Saturday Night Live and hosts Sasheer Zamata Party Time. It's Sasheer Zamata!
Sasheer Zamata!
Welcome!
Thank you.
Sasheer, I believe, the first of our guests to bring her purse on stage.
Oh, for real?
She doesn't trust any of you.
Yeah. Yeah.
have you ever had anything stolen at a gig?
Not at a gig, but like one time in either middle school or high school, I left my purse, I don't know, in the courtyard or wherever we were, just like go across to get something. I came back and someone like opened my purse, dismantled my phone. It was like one of those Nokia things where you could take the battery off. And
what?
Yeah, and nothing like important got stolen, but I was like, I will never trust anyone again.
It scarred you for life.
It did. Also, my mom's also like, just keep your purse on you because everyone's bad.
Interesting.
Yeah. And she was the one that was paying for stuff when you were little. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah, she's like, I'm not going to pay for more stuff. Keep the stuff that you have.
I'm fascinated with this person that dismantled your phone. They didn't take the phone.
They didn't take the phone. It was just like, it was the small Nokia one where it's like the battery just like pops off on the back. So they just like took it apart.
But so they took the battery?
No.
No,
they like just took it apart and like left it by my purse. Maybe like prove a point, like, bitch, don't trust people.
Like I thought that's what you did when you didn't want to be tracked anymore. Like, and then the, you know, like you take the battery out and then you crack the phone in half.
I don't think it was like that. They just like messed with my stuff but didn't take it.
What a weird like way to mess with your mind. Like,
I know.
Hey, I'm gonna put your battery over here.
Yeah.
Sasheer, I could talk about your personal belongings all night, but I would like to address the dazzling career that you've had.
Okay, yeah.
Because I'm a big fan. Let's first of all talk about that you were on Saturday Night Live for 4 seasons.
Yes.
It was awesome. Yeah. Who were some of the favorite hosts that you got to work with? Because that must have been exciting.
I really liked Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah.
Ooh, who wouldn't?
I mean, yeah, great to look at. But he's also, like, really good at improv, which was surprising. Because, I don't know. I mean, at the time when he hosted the first time, he wasn't doing a ton of comedies, but now when I see him in comedies, I was like, this makes sense because he just has good timing.
Oh, right on.
Yeah. I love Taraji P. Henson. She was so fun.
Mm.
Sarah Silverman, I just love in general, and she was great when she came. Yeah, we had, I mean, great people.
That's fun. And were there musical performances that you got to see that were especially meaningful to you?
I don't know about meaningful. Okay. Oh, wait, cool. No. Oh, Adele.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Were you shook?
Shook. Ugh. Yes. She was just amazing. And, every performance she did on that show was just, like, jaw-dropping. I saw her at Radio City, and she was doing songs from her... It was, at the time, her new album, and I hadn't heard them at all, but I was still sobbing. I had no attachment to them yet, but I was like, I get it! I feel all these words!
Talk about the Sashir's Zameda Party Time show.
It's my variety show. I've been doing it in Brooklyn for 4 years, and since I moved to L.A., I have moved the show here.
Oh, right on.
It's a monthly show, and I have stand-ups, and we do games with the audience, and music, and it's just a really fun time, and a good way to, like, connect the performers and the audience, and you should come if you want to.
Even if you don't want to, you should come. It sounds like you might win them over.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Another thing I found very interesting about you is you have been the celebrity ambassador for women's rights for the ACLU.
Yeah.
Wow. I did not know that.
Yeah.
The ACLU a few years ago asked me to work with them with their women's rights project, and it's a huge compliment. They just saw my work and thought that what I was doing, what I was saying, is aligning with the stuff that they've been doing. And my job is basically just to be a mouthpiece to whatever they need. So I just amplify whatever mission they have going on or whatever causes need the most attention, and just try to talk about it, write essays, do speeches, write sketches, write essays, whatever I need to do, I'll do it.
That's awesome.
Like activist comedy?
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, we need that. We need that now.
Yeah. What's your favorite woman's right?
Whoa.
She's stumped.
Yeah.
I assume you rank them.
Wow. You know, they're all great.
They are all great. Yeah. You know what? You know what that proves? Equality.
Just
like they're all equal.
Yeah, the right to be equal.
Now, you also are an ambassador for a Kate Spade perfume.
Yeah.
Is that pretty much the same thing?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, this exact same thing. Same,
smell the justice.
Same causes, same, yeah. Yeah, I don't know how much inequality in perfume there is right now, but...
You're allowed to have fun also. I imagine that's fun to do.
It was very fun to do. Yeah, I've been working with Kate Spade for a few years, and same thing where it's like, where they need me, I'll go. Yeah.
Do you get to have input on the like the actual creation of the scents and stuff?
No, not at all. They were just like, this is done. The product is done. Please give us your face so we can sell it.
Right.
And that's really all I did.
But I'm sure you enjoy the scent of it as well.
I do enjoy the scent, And the campaign was really cool because it was me, Laura Dern, and Tavi Givenson, and we would kind of tell stories about our life, and it was just a very real, sincere campaign where it didn't feel cheesy. We weren't just like, get this perfume because I wear it every day. It's like, it was like, here's what this means to me. Mm. Here's what this scent reminds me of. Yeah, I don't know. I just haven't been a part of a thing like that before, and it's very cool.
Very right cool on. Indeed.
Well, you smell delightful.
You do smell great.
Thank you so much.
I wish you people listening could smell her. I realize how creepy that sounds as soon as I said it. Thanks so much for being here, and hopefully you will stay for the duration of the show. Sashir Zameda, ladies and gentlemen. Helen, against whom will Sashir be competing tonight?
He is an actor and comedian known for his roles in Inglourious Basterds and Freaks and Geeks, and who can be seen on the Kevin Pollak chat show. It's Sam Levine.
Sam Levine.
Hello. Sam.
Sam, did you bring any personal belongings on stage as well?
I did. I guess this jacket counts.
Yeah, you don't want anyone to run away with that. Yeah. Say, Sam.
Yes, Keith.
Helen mentioned the Kevin Pollak chat show. How did you get involved with Kevin, and what exactly do you do on the show? Because you played several different kinds of roles.
That's a fair question.
Thank you.
And also multiple parts of a question.
Okay.
So how I got involved is when Kevin first wanted to do the show, which will be 10 years ago this March, he wanted to do it as literally a live streaming podcast. Mm-hmm. There was no knowing how that was going to go, so Kevin wanted to ask two friends of his who he could interview that he, I've now realized, did not mind failing in front of, had the thing gone badly.
Yeah.
So it was me and LeVar Burton.
Wow.
Were guests, the first two guests on the very first episode of Kevin Pollak's Chat Show in March of 2009. I'm happy to say it went very well.
Yeah.
And then the one thing I realized while sitting there and doing this live stream, I was like, wow, he doesn't really have enough staff to keep a live stream running smoothly, and we are friends, so I will come back next week when he does the next one and just help out.
Oh,
and
nice
so,
of you.
Well, I didn't have anything going on Sunday afternoon. Still don't, apparently. Please, we podcasters all know. So I showed up, and I kept doing that every Sunday.
Wow.
And so then that's sort of how I became a sidekick on that show. And then 2 years ago, almost now, Kevin started doing The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which shoots in New York. So he is gone a lot and needs someone to guest host for him, which I guess technically I've been subbing for him about 4 years now, maybe five. But that's become one of my favorite things to do, is to take over the hosting role, because then I get to pick my guest. And it's sometimes I get lucky and I get people who I know well or want to get to know well.
Sure.
And it's been a lot of fun.
That's awesome. So how do I get to fail in front of LeVar Burton?
Just ask him. He's a pretty cool dude.
Sam, you're a regular on a great podcast called Doug Loves Movies, which also has a trivia game element to it.
Yes.
And you usually do very, very well.
I think people seem to think that I do, and I feel like I did a lot better when it was just the Leonard Maltin game that he played on the show.
And then for those who don't know, Leonard Maltin game is you're guessing a movie based on the actors in that
movie. It's like Name That Tune, but instead of songs and notes, it's movies and actors. I felt like I did a lot better back then. I think I do okay now. Honestly, I don't know. I don't keep a track of how I do.
What I find very interesting about it, though, is that it really polarizes people. Because I think, to me, you're my most loved participant of that show. But other people seem to not like that you do so well.
Well, it's not that they don't like that I do well. It's that they get upset when I become a stickler for the rules that Doug has established over the years of doing the show, and then for no reason whatsoever, he will just change the rules on the fly.
What, is he high?
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, he doesn't do it often, but sometimes it'll happen, and then I'll get bent out of shape, and then people like to make fun of that or whatever. And you know what? They're fine, too, but rules are rules for a reason, guys.
Yeah.
It would just be...
Well, you've got Helen Hong at the judge's table here, so everything's going to go
podcasts,
up and up.
And I don't like
Absolutely.
That.
All right, finally, I have to ask you about Freaks and Geeks.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
I had heard so many people talking about it for so many years, and then finally I started watching it. I was like, oh my God, it's so great. And then I realized I was getting to the end of the season, which means I was getting to the end of the series, and I didn't want it to end.
I have heard that a lot, and I feel for you.
Why did you take away my joy?
Well, I don't like it when people are happy.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. I insisted we end the show after 18 episodes.
Oh, okay.
You know, here's what I tell people who have said that to me, like, oh, I'm watching it and I'm 12 episodes in and I'm getting sad. I say, space it out. Do not binge the last six in a weekend. Do one every 2 weeks, you know. If you're like a serious fan and you're like, I absolutely need something more, we did release a special edition box set of the DVDs, which we call it the yearbook edition because it literally looks like a high school yearbook from the 80s. And there are two bonus discs of material on in that box set. And one of them is a fully written but unproduced script. Of the show.
You provided a real solution.
It's better than nothing.
Yeah, now all I have to do is get a computer with an optical drive.
Sure. You can watch it on a DVD.
What now?
Oh, boy.
Thanks so much for being here, Sam Levine.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah. All right, Sashir and Sam, we ask each of you to provide us with a few topics outside your field of work in which you feel you have some expertise. Sashir, you told us you know a lot about Beyonce, Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2, and show choir.
Yes.
Sam, you said you know a lot about the first three Die Hard movies.
Damn right.
Poker.
Sure.
And The Simpsons, seasons 3 through 9.
That's correct.
Ah.
Well, later on we're going to ask you some in-depth trivia questions about one of those topics. But first, we're going to get your thoughts on something you might know nothing about. It's time to split some hairs with our What's the Difference round. We'll have one question for each of you, each worth up to 2 points. If either of you gives an incorrect answer, the other person has a chance to steal. Your topic today, space. First up in space, Sashir. Sashir, they both come from space, but according to NASA, what is the difference between a meteor and a meteorite? A meteor and a meteorite.
Okay, a meteorite has stuff fall from it.
Okay.
And a meteor stays intact.
That is an answer. So to summarize, for Helen to note that, a meteorite has stuff, has moving. Is that what I said? A meteorite has stuff moving, and a meteor stays intact.
Well, okay. I guess I meant, like, if something falls from the sky into our atmosphere on the ground, and you're like, what is that? Oh, it must have came from a meteorite. And a meteor just, like, stays in space.
Meteor stays in space, and meteorite is when you say, hey, look at that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. All right. I think that's a little clearer. All right, we have Sashir's answer. We don't know yet if she is correct. Sam, if you don't think she got it exactly right, you can try to steal. What do you think?
I think she's very close. I think a meteorite is most meteors break up upon entering the atmosphere, and meteorites are any of the pieces of a meteor that actually make their way to into our atmosphere, whereas a meteor stays in orbit.
That sounds like something, too. All right. Well, this segment has fallen to Earth, so let's go to Helen Hong at the judges' table for the facts.
Here are the facts. NASA says that a meteor is a bit of interplanetary material falling through Earth's atmosphere and heated by friction to make it glow. When you see a shooting star, a flash or streak of light, that's a meteor. Some geologists define meteor as the light itself, but NASA pegs it as the material.
Which I should say, up until we started taping tonight, I was arguing with my co-producer and director, Jim, because we each found a site on NASA. One said it's just the light, one says it's the light and the stuff.
Get it together, NASA.
Yeah, get it together, NASA.
Wow.
You know what it is? It's probably that government shutdown.
That's got to be it.
That'll be topical when this drops. Oh, God, what if it still is? What if it still is?
God,
no. Oh, no. I really hope that that's a dated reference by the time people are listening to this. All right, go ahead, Ellen. So,
either way, before it hits our atmosphere, it is not a meteor. It is a meteoroid. Meteoroid.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever said that word before.
All right, what about a meteorite?
A meteorite is a chunk of rock and metal from asteroids and other planetary bodies that survive their journey through the atmosphere and fall to the ground. If it came from space and lands on Earth, it's a meteorite.
That's right. So, just to be clear, a meteoroid makes a meteor and becomes a meteorite. Boy, I could go for some meat right about now. It's fun to talk about. What does that mean as far as our points go, Helen?
I think Sashir gets 1 point because you did get meteorite correct. You said it's falls from stuff that falls onto Earth, I think is what you said. And you said meteor stays in space, which is not quite correct.
Not quite correct, yeah. But 1 point for Sashir.
I'll accept that.
All right, up next in space, Sam. Sam, your question comes from a listener, Kira Gowan of Los Angeles, California, who is actually the External Relations Associate at the Maximum Fun Network. So if you need any External Relations Associated, call Kira. Sam, they both can be spaces in which to put stuff, but what is the difference between a nook and a cranny?
That's a fun one, right?
And a cranny.
That's a fair question.
We're nothing if not fair.
Well, all right. Let's see. A nook is something. I believe a cranny.
Okay, we're going to start with the second one.
I'm going to start
with
crannies.
Second part first, yeah.
Cranny is when you have space beneath something.
Okay.
So you say, like, oh, put it in the cranny over there. That's beneath the floor. A nook is in the side of something.
Oh.
It's bonus space in the side, not below or above.
So side and beneath, but not below or above.
For nook is to the side,
yes.
Cranny is beneath.
All right, we've got Sam's answer. We don't know yet if he is correct. Sashir, what do you think?
I'm going to say that a nook is a space you can close, like a cabinet or something.
Okay.
And a cranny is an open space between things, like a corner.
Okay. Well, we've got to clear the space out of this segment, so let's go to Helen Hong at the judges' table for the facts.
All I know is I want an English muffin right now.
I think we all do. We all do. That was such effective advertising.
It really was. Hey, Helen, let's. What are we saying? Oh, Helen, what happens now?
Here are the facts.
Thanks so much.
Here are the facts. A nook is a small place that is hidden or partially sheltered, but purposely built into a larger place, like a breakfast nook or a telephone nook you might see in some old apartments. A cranny is a crack or a crevice that usually isn't built on purpose, like in a rock or a wall.
That's right. So if the walls of your old-fashioned kitchen are falling apart, you might have a cranny in your nook. What does that mean as far as our points go, Helen?
I think neither of you got either one of that right.
Sounds fair.
I think both of you bombed out on that one.
Helen, what is our score at the end of that first round?
At the end of the round, Sashir Zameda has 1 point and Sam Levine has 0 points.
But those scores are bound to change as we move on to questions about topics guests have chosen for themselves. That's all up ahead when we come back on Go Fact Yourself. And now a word from our sponsor. This episode of Go Fact Yourself is sponsored by The Big Quiz Thing, the trivia game show spectacular. For more than 16 years, The Big Quiz Thing team has been America's premier providers of high-tech, customized team trivia spectaculars for corporate and private events. Team building, office parties, fundraising galas, birthday parties, bar and bat mitzvahs, and much more nationwide. With unique multimedia trivia puzzles, dynamic professional quiz masters, expertly written quiz questions, innovative formats, original custom-written material, and one-of-a-kind digital answer system, the BQT expands the fun and friendly bar trivia format into a big-time TV-style game show experience. And hey, if you're in the Los Angeles area, there's an excellent chance that your customized Big Quiz Thing event will be hosted by... J. Keith Van Stratton. Audible gasp for some reason. Yes, I've recently joined the BQT's Ace Quizmaster team, and I'm ready and eager to bring the ultimate team trivia experience directly to your home, office, or any other venue of your choice. Visit bigquizthing.com today for a personal consultation and get started making all of your trivia dreams come true. That's bigquizthing.com. Thanks, Big Quiz Thing.
Greetings, I am Plek Dexsetter, contacting you from the Zik Squadron, which is, frankly, sort of crappy, but I'm here on a heroic mission with my trusty crew, C-53.
Heroic feels like an exaggeration.
Okay, sure. And Security Officer Dar.
Plek, don't put me in your stupid recording.
Well, and we're all traveling aboard our trusty starship, the Bargerian Jade. Bargy.
What? Sorry, I'm awake.
It's fine.
I was just flying while asleep.
Hey there, this is Alden Ford. I play Plek, and we are so excited to announce that our podcast, Mission to Zix, is now part of the Maximum Fun Network. Our third season launches on Max Fun on March 20th. Binge seasons 1 and 2 right now. That's Mission to Zix, ZYXX.
Welcome back to Go Fact Yourself, where our score is Sashir Zameda with 1 point and Sam Levine with 0 points.
I'm sorry, Dad.
Once again, here's J. Keith Van Stratton.
Thank you, Helen. Thanks, everybody. Sashir Zameda, of your many interests, you told us you know a lot about Beyonce, Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2, and Show Choir. Tell us a little bit about each of those. First, you said you know a lot about Beyonce.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan. I've seen her live a few times, and I have all her albums. I just love her.
She's kind of a superior human.
She really is. Like, but also, like, a really good example of hard work, because, like... I reference this article a lot sometimes when I'm, like, feeling down or something. There was, like, some review of her first solo album, and it compared her... I think the title was, like, Beyonce, no Ashanti.
Well, to be fair, that is accurate.
She is not Ashanti. They are two different people.
Yeah. Wow.
But it was just a funny, like, you know, back in 2003 when Ashanti was on top, everyone's like, who's this new girl Beyonce? And, like, now you think of Beyonce, and you're like, she's always been amazing. She's always been, like, beloved. But it's so, you know, she hasn't. There's been a time where she had to, like, work to get to where she is.
Right.
So I love reminding myself that, like, oh, yeah, it takes time and practice. And you can be, well, no, we can't all be Beyonce, but, you know.
Oh. You had me
you
there for a second.
Close.
I was very excited about being Beyonce.
She is just so, yeah. And her Instagram is, yeah.
It's just, everything's great.
She's perfect.
Yeah.
She and The Rock. I'm like, who are these, like, like, where did you come?
It's hard to believe we're the same species sometimes.
Seriously.
Yeah. Sashir, you also said you know a lot about Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2.
Yes. I got hit by a car in college.
Oh, my goodness.
Did not think that's where the story was going to start.
Yikes.
And I'm fine.
Good.
But I couldn't leave my room for a while, and so the only thing I asked for was, like, soup and someone to go to the library and rent Kill Bill 1 and 2. Because I already loved the movie, and I just, like, watched it over and over again. And that scene where she's, like, wiggling her big toe to walk again, I don't know, just really resonated with me.
Yeah.
And also just cool to see badass women be badass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And a lot of the actresses in those films, like, did their own stunts, and they were just so badass.
It was just really cool to see Yeah, I just love that movie so much, and I want to do that one day.
Yeah, awesome. And then finally you said you know a lot about show choir.
Yeah, I was in show choir in high school, and it, like, consumed my life. We would do I'm from Indianapolis, Indiana, and we would...
Oh, cool. Ooh. We made it out.
Yeah. I think, isn't that on the town sign? One day you'll leave. Now, for those who don't know, can you explain a little bit about what show choir is?
Yes, it is basically a musical without the dialogue. It's just like the songs and dancing from musicals or show tunes or whatever your show choir director chooses to use. We had a lot of Barbra Streisand songs because my instructor loved Barbra Streisand, and I do too. And yeah, we would do competitions at different high schools. And we would travel and compete against other high schools. And
wait, so you would take a Barbra Streisand song, for instance, mm-hmm. and then you would choreograph a dance number to it?
Yeah, so the school would hire a choreographer to come teach these teenagers how to flick our wrists and point our toes and stuff. And yeah.
And would you do different arrangements? Would you jazz it up? Would it be like people who need people?
Yes.
That's my example of jazzing up, apparently. I don't know what that was.
It's exactly what we did.
Normally when podcasting, I tell people, don't sing, you don't want to get sued, but I think you're going to be fine there.
Okay.
It was kind of unrecognizable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just be grateful I didn't do the song from Yentl.
And would there be like a front woman or man at any point, or
people singing solos?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There were different solos for each song. I never got a solo.
Not
you know what? You can have your solo now. Hit it.
No, sorry.
And how did your team do? Did you win these competitions?
We won a lot of competitions. We were really good, or runners up. But it's funny because there was so many fundamentals with show choir. We were the group that didn't care about costume changes or flashy things. We would just sing. We were really vocals and our choreography were really important to us, where other groups would change their costume or use props and do all this other flashy stuff. We were no, we're fundamentalists. We care. We care about the craft.
And did you guys look down on the a cappella people?
You know, I didn't have an a cappella team in my high school. I didn't know what that was until college.
Mm-hmm. Why were you one of the a cappella people that got looked down
on? No, I just thought maybe there might be beef between the show choir people and the a cappella people, and now I've just thought of a really cool TV show idea.
Yeah. Don't steal it, everybody.
I mean, yeah, it would be watched by everybody.
It's like Glee meets Glee without music.
Glee meets a knife fight.
Perfect. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. So, Shashir, you said you know a lot about Beyonce, Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2, and show choir. Today we want to quiz you about Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2.
Great.
I have to tell you, in preparation for the show, I rewatched the movies. Oh, my God, they're so good.
I had loved
them at the time, but I think what I really hadn't appreciated was how original they were, because you've seen so many of these kinds of shots and music drops and whatnot since then. What do you love about it specifically besides, you've mentioned the strong female roles. Did you like it for filmmaking itself?
I did. I mean, the colors are so vivid. Mm-hmm. The shots are so cool. The music's amazing. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I love all of it.
And any other favorite Tarantino films?
Inglourious Basterds was great.
Yeah, that's good.
Thank you so much.
Sam, if I'm not mistaken, you were in that movie.
Maybe.
Okay, yeah. Again, you're not very familiar with your own bio.
I've not watched it in a while.
All right, Sashir. Well, just ahead, we're going to enlist the help of a bona fide expert in Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2 to test your mastery in the subject with an expert-level question worth up to 3 points. But before that, to let you show your love, here are 5 trivia questions about the topic, each worth 1 point. If you want it, you're allowed a total of 2 hints for these 5 questions. Now, Sam, do listen closely, because if Sashir answers incorrectly, you can steal. Sam, by the way, how much do you know about Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2?
I've seen them a number
of
times.
All right, that might help.
Yeah.
Sashir, here's your first question. Kill Bill Volume 1 opens with the on-screen quote, "Revenge is a dish best served cold," which is credited to a proverb of what Star Trek alien race?
Klingon?
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. It is Klingon.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Fun fact, you are named after something in the original Star Trek.
I am, yeah. My parents are Trekkies. And
amazing.
And Sashir is from, actually, the episode's called By Any Other Name. And Captain Kirk is flirting with this alien princess. as he does. And he gave her a rose, and she goes, oh, we have something like this on my planet, except it's made out of crystal, and it's called Sashir.
Oh, that's lovely. Oh, yeah.
I love
that. It could have
been Crystal Rose. Yeah, I guess so.
I'm not complaining. I'm just saying it's interesting there. Let's move on. Question number two. Sashir, combined, how many Oscars did the Kill Bill movies win?
I'm going to say zero.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct.
Wow, it was snubbed.
Fun kind of amazing fact, they weren't even nominated for any.
What?
I do not understand that. No Oscar nominations for those beautiful
films. I think
films.
That's hard for an action film. I don't know if there's
but
too many.
But even for cinematography, I mean, it was like you were saying, like the colors actor. Were amazing and the shots were amazing.
I was very surprised to learn that.
I wanted to flip a table.
You're two for two. Here's question number three. The plot of the film centers on a woman, the bride, bent on killing the people who wronged her. What is the name of the list she creates to keep track of the five people to whom she wishes to bring death? You do have a hint available if you'd like to use the hint.
Yeah, I would like the hint.
Helen, how about that first hint?
All of the words to the answer are in the question.
Would you like me to repeat the
all
question?
All of the words in the answer are in the question.
Correct.
And I would like you to repeat the question, please.
The question is, what is the name of the list she creates to keep track of the five people to whom she wishes to bring death?
Death list five?
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct.
Wow.
Excellent use of the hint.
Wow.
She wishes to bring death is that's going to go on a greeting card. It's the nicest way of saying I'd like to murder you.
That is the hardest anyone has hung on your every word, J.K. Serious.
I got to admit, I like the feeling. I might go into politics. I like people. It's nice to have a lady listen to me for once. Question number four. While carrying out this mission, the bride is nearly shot by Vernita, played by Vivica A. Fox, who managed to hide a gun in a box of cereal. What was the brand name on that cereal box? You do have a second hint available if you'd like to use it.
Yes, I would like to.
Helen, how about that second hint?
It's the sound a very big gun would make.
Pow?
Helen, is it pow?
It is not
pow. No, I'm terribly sorry. Sam with a chance to steal.
Kaboom.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. Wow.
Wow.
Good pull, Sam. Fun fact, Kaboom was the name of a real cereal made by General Mills. Let's see if you can bounce back. Yeah, really. Yeah.
Have you ever tried Kaboom?
They were bullet-shaped. It was great. No, they were not bullet-shaped. Number five, Sashir, we've talked about the bride, but now let's talk about the groom. He's played by Christopher Alan Nelson, and Mr. Nelson also plays a role behind the scenes on the film. In what department did Christopher Alan Nelson work?
I'm going to say sound.
Helen, is it sound?
That is not correct.
No, not sound. Sam, again, with a chance to steal.
I'm going to say the grip department.
Was he in the grip department?
He was not in the grip department.
No, the correct answer was makeup. Makeup. That was, that was hard if you didn't know it. Fun fact, he actually has won an Oscar for his work in makeup on Suicide Squad and won two Emmys for his work doing makeup on American Horror Story.
Wow.
All right, so Sashir, you did pretty well in that round, but now here is your expert-level question that requires multiple answers. It is time for your cluster fact. Growing, I think. It's exciting.
It is.
The question is so high level that we'll be bringing on an expert to assess your response. The answer is worth up to 3 points. The iconic costume in Kill Bill is the yellow jumpsuit worn by Uma Thurman. For up to 3 points, what famous person's costume is it based on? What phrase is written on the bottom of the shoes worn with the jumpsuit? And who designed this costume?
I think this is really wrong, but I want to say Bruce Lee.
Bruce Lee, all right. That's who designed it?
No.
Oh, that's who it was based on. Okay, all right. All right, so we have Bruce Lee for who it was based upon. All right, what was written on the bottom of the shoes?
You had it coming.
You had it coming, all right. And then finally, who designed the costume?
I don't really know costume designer names.
Well, then how about the name of a friend that you just want to give a mention to?
I think Sam probably designed it.
I think Sam did.
Yeah.
That would be a twist.
Thank you so
all right.
much.
So we've got Bruce Lee. What was the other one? We got Bruce Lee, you had it coming, and Sam. All right. Helen is taking note of those answers. We have an expert on hand who can tell us for sure. Helen, who do we have with us tonight?
Here with us tonight by Skype from her home in New York City is an award-winning costume designer whose credits include Mr. Robot, Grey Gardens, and Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2. It's Kat Thomas.
Kat Thomas. Kat, are you there?
Hi, everyone.
Oh, great. We're so happy that you were able to join us tonight. As Helen mentioned, you are award-winning. You got an Emmy nomination and a Costume Designers Guild Award for Grey Gardens. Congratulations on those.
Thank you.
Now, that was the HBO movie that was based on a documentary, if I'm not mistaken.
That was, exactly.
Yes, not the Broadway musical that was also based on the documentary.
Exactly.
All right. So what was it like to design something that was already based on clothes that were rather iconic that were already seen in a documentary?
You know, it's always a it's a little nerve-wracking when something that's sort of iconic that, you know, Grey Gardens had sort of the Maisels did this amazing documentary. And so when you're recreating something that everyone knows very well, you know, you have to be very careful how you treat it. But we had a great time. It, Drew Barrymore and Jessica Lange were fantastic. It was a great experience.
That's
tons
great.
Of fun.
Now we mentioned earlier that there were no Oscar nominations at all for the Kill Bill movies. Did that surprise you?
There weren't. I guess you don't realize we're so far out from Kill Bill now, you know, like over 10 years. And I think you look back and it becomes this sort of iconic thing and you think, wow, it's impossible that it couldn't have been nominated. But at the time, you know, we were just making a really kick-ass movie.
and you did. Good job. How did you get to be the costume designer on the Kill Bill movies?
I actually had met Uma Thurman through Ethan Hawke, who was her husband at the time. And, you know, I lived in New York. I've been a New Yorker for a long time. And she introduced me to Quentin, and, you know, and there we go.
Wow.
And you worked with another designer on the film as well.
I did. Yeah. Kamiko Ogawa, who lives in Japan. And she was like just the biggest resource for the kimonos and the really technical stuff that we did over there.
How many costumes did you end up having to design for that movie? Because there are so many roles.
Oh, God. I don't even know. I mean, it was, you know, it was two movies, really, that sure. we shot as one.
Right.
So, you know, it was an incredible amount of work. And Quentin is always writing and adding things. And it's just improvising. So, you know, one of the trivia questions actually was something that he improvised at the last minute, which was the soles of her shoes. So I had about a week to figure out how to put a new sole on her shoe.
Wow.
Wow.
So was that the most challenging project that you had in designing those costumes?
I mean, it was one of them. Yeah. I mean, you know, certainly being in China and not having the resources that you have in the United States, you know, at that time. But yes, it was definitely challenging.
They don't have a mood in China?
Yeah, no, there's no mood.
Let's go to mood.
Nope. Yeah.
That yellow jumpsuit is so amazing. And now it's like a frequently used Halloween costume. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's great. I think Bruce Lee and, you know, you got, that's obviously one correct question. So,
well, guess we know now. You got that one right this year.
Yay!
So it wasn't exactly a jumpsuit that you designed, right?
It was not. No, when I redesigned it, I redesigned it as a two-piece because Uma actually had just had her second child. So, you know, thinking about all the stunt work that we had to do and the wire work that we had to do, it just seemed easier for her to be able to get in and out of it, to be able to have it be two pieces. So, yeah, that's how we redesigned it.
Also, it's the worst to have to pee in a jumpsuit. Gosh.
I had real, real sympathy for her.
How many of those jumpsuits were made for the movies?
We made over 30 because it wasn't just her. You know, it was Uma. It was her other double, Zoe Bell, who is also an amazing stunt woman and also actress. And then we had a sword double for her. So
oh,
there were three.
A sword double?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I have a new hashtag goal.
And where did the costumes end up? Do you have one of them?
I do not actually
what?
Have one of them.
30
you know,
of them? They couldn't give one to Kat?
You guys should see how bloody they were at the end of it. I mean, I maybe two clean ones.
Wow.
Of which Quentin has one and Uma has one.
That's great. All right, well, let's get to the reason that we brought you here tonight as far as our game goes. You heard the question that we asked of Shashiri. We wanted to know about that iconic yellow jumpsuit. We wanted to know what famous person's costume it was based on. Helen, what did Shashir say?
Shashir said Bruce Lee.
And Kat, we know now that that is...
correct.
That's right. That's a point for Shashir. And Kat, specifically, what movie of Bruce Lee's was that worn in?
And Game of Death.
Helen?
Huh?
That is correct. 1 point. All right, next we wanted to know...
Sorry, Bruce.
That's all right. Next we wanted to know what was written on the bottom of the shoes that she wore with that jumpsuit. Helen, what did Shashir say?
Shashir said, you had it coming.
And Kat?
That is wrong, but I really like that.
Yeah, that's pretty good. It was a little more succinct than that. What was it?
At the risk of getting bleeped, which I will not, it says F-U.
Yes, and the U is the letter U, but the F is not just the letter F. Yeah. And you can actually, if it goes by very fast, but if you pause it, you can see it very clearly that that's what it says. And finally, we wanted to know who designed that costume. Helen, what did Shashir say?
Shashir said, Sam Levine.
Kat, would you like to break some news on this podcast?
I'm sorry, Sam, it was not you. It was me.
It was you, Kat Thomas.
Yeah, but I helped.
Nice try, Sam Levine.
All right.
Yeah, maybe next time. Kat, if people want to find out more about you and your work, where can they find it?
Well, you can see my work. I work on Mr. Robot. It's a great show with Sam Esmail and Rami Malek. And I just did a show called Homecoming, which is on Amazon with Julie Roberts. So,
people like that as well. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It was a pleasure to talk with you. Kat Thomas, ladies and gentlemen. Kat Thomas.
Thank
you. Helen, how about a score recap at the end of that round?
At the end of that round, Shashir Zameda has 5 points and Sam Levine has 1 point with a round of questions coming up.
That's right. We're going to talk with Sam about a topic he knows about. Plus later, Sam and Shashir will go head-to-head in our Fast Facts round to find a winner on Go Fact Yourself. Go Fact Yourself is part of the Maximum Fun Jumbotron program. The Jumbotron program allows anyone to share their message on our podcast, just like the Jumbotron at the ballpark. It's a fun way to show your support for your favorite celebrity trivia podcast and get the word out about what you're up to. It's easy and cheap, only $100 for a personal message or $200 for a promotional one, and your message will be read by Helen or me.
A promotional message is one with any sort of promotional or commercial component to it. The cost is $200, and the character limit for your message is $500. Use your promotional message to advertise
nonprofit organizations,
independent entrepreneurs,
Kickstarter projects,
webcomics,
medical marijuana dispensaries,
and any other business you'd like to promote.
Medical marijuana dispensaries.
Uh-huh.
A personal message is one without any promotional or commercial component to it. The cost is $100, and the character limit to your message is 350. What can you do in 350 characters?
Wish a friend happy birthday.
Congratulate a family member on a new job.
Come out to your parents.
Oh, please do that. What a great way to tell your parents. First, you'd have to explain what a podcast is, maybe.
My parents are Korean.
Messages are scheduled on a first-come, first-served basis. Get more information and schedule your ad at MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron.
Thank you, Jumbotron!
Dead Pilots Society brings you exclusive readings of comedy pilots that were never made, featuring actors like Patton Oswalt.
So the vampire from the future sleeps in the dude's studio during the day, and they hunt monsters at night. It's Blade meets the Odd Couple.
Adam Scott and Jane Levy.
Come on, Corey. She's too serious, too businessy. She doesn't know the hokey pokey.
Well, she'll learn what it's all about.
Busy Phillips and Dave Koechner.
Baby, this is family.
My Uncle Tell, who showed his wiener to Cinderella at Disneyland, is family. Do you want him staying with us?
He did stay with us for 3 months.
And he was a delight.
A new pilot every month, only on Dead Pilot Society for maximum fun.
Welcome back to Go Fact Yourself, where our score is Shashir Zameda with 5 points and Sam Levine with 1 point. Once again, here's J. Keith Van Stratton.
Thank you, Helen. Thank you, everybody. Sam Levine, of your many interests, you told us you know a lot about the first three Die Hard movies, uh-huh. Poker, and The Simpsons, seasons 3 through 9.
Yeah.
Tell us first about the first three Die Hard movies. Why just the first three, and what do you like about them so much?
Well, I was introduced to the Die Hard franchise over the 4th of July weekend of 1990, when Die Hard 2 was playing in theaters. Mm-hmm. And my father took me to see that movie when I was 8 years old, and I was like, hey, this is pretty good. And he was like, oh, if you liked it, you should see the first one. And so then he allowed me to rent from the video store the first Die Hard movie, which instantly became my favorite movie, and a conservative estimate, I would say I've seen it 300 times.
Wow.
Really? That is a conservative number.
What? Were you hit by a car and needed to watch
it? No. Worse, I had no friends.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. But you turned it around.
No, it's cool, guys. It all worked out.
Oh, right, yeah, absolutely.
Wait, are those movies appropriate for 8-year-olds?
Oh, definitely not. No,
is
not
that why
chance.
You loved it?
Yeah.
It's funny. I was actually more offended by the fact that he saw them in the wrong order.
Oh yeah.
Like that would have upset me as a potential parent.
Exactly. And then no one wants to acknowledge the fifth one. That's why
you don't consider that canon.
No.
It's all right.
Just...
Sam, you also said you know a lot about poker.
I do, and I'm very upset with myself for giving such a broad thing to say like poker. Because I don't know what you think of when you hear the word poker. I know what I think of. I think of playing poker and knowing the game and the rules. It occurred to me after I said that to you, I was like, oh, I wonder if he thinks that I mean like poker, like the sport that is sometimes on ESPN.
Yeah. I actually thought you meant the fireplace instrument.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So this will be a very interesting quiz.
Yeah.
But tell us why you know about playing poker.
My grandmother taught me how to play poker when I was 5.
What?
Did your family not know how children work?
You know... Guys, this was the 80s.
Okay.
There were no rules.
It's a different time.
It's a different time, man.
And do you play for money?
No. When we were kids, we just played for chips.
No, I meant,
that
but
had
these
no
days,
value.
You continue to play poker over the years?
Yes. I played in my first cash game, as they call it, when I was about 10. For pennies. But then by the time I was a teenager, I had friends, and they knew how to play also. And so we played for, 25 cents, a dollar here, a dollar there. And, I stuck with it and paid for my education, as they say. And now I play in a couple of weekly home games.
That's great.
Wow.
And finally, you said you know a lot about The Simpsons. Seasons 3 through 9.
That's true. And I'm, again, very angry at myself for giving you such a wide range of things in that.
Well, to
not
be fair,
specific at all.
It's had over 30 seasons, so
that's
limiting
true.
It to 3 through 9 is helpful.
I mean, in relatively speaking, it is. I could have just said, The Simpsons, season 4, episodes 9, 10, and 11.
Yeah.
I should have done that.
Maybe there's a lesson here for future guests.
I think there is.
Yeah.
I was... A big, big fan of the show. I still remain a fan of the show, but because those seasons aired during what I consider to be was the most absorbing portion of my brain's time on Earth. Most of those episodes have stuck with me in a way that few things have. And I have not rewatched most of those episodes in well over 10 years, but I can replay some of them in my head at any time.
Wow.
Very, very interesting. All right, so to summarize, you said you know a lot about the first three Die Hard movies, Poker and The Simpsons, seasons 3 through 9.
Yeah.
Today we're going to quiz you about The Simpsons, seasons 3 through 9.
What a surprise. my funeral.
Do you have a favorite episode from that time?
My favorite episode is Mr. Plow.
Mr. Plow. Yeah, that's pretty good. That's his name.
That name again is Mr.
Plow. There you go. How about a favorite line? Do you have lines that you remember and love from that time?
We would be here all day.
Okay.
But I mean, it varies. It really does change all the time. And right now, this is going to sound so stupid because it's not even that funny. Out of context.
Okay.
But there's an episode called Bart of Darkness where Bart is stuck at home in bed. He's got a broken foot and he's watching, he wants to watch Krusty the Clown on TV. And Krusty says, oh, sorry, kids, we're taking off for the summer, but don't worry. They'll be showing episodes of classic Krusty. And then they go to run and then they show and it's black and white and the little graphic comes up and it says something like original air date November 10th 1963.
Oh, no.
And it's two dudes sitting around a table both smoking cigarettes and Krusty the Clown does not look like we know him and he just says, hello, welcome to the Krusty the Clown Show. Today we'll be discussing collective bargaining agreements with AFL-CIO Chairman George Meany. George, let me be blunt. Is there a labor crisis in America today?
Yeah.
I love that Jake Heath asked you for a line,
yeah,
and you
I'm
basically
sorry.
Replayed
yeah.
the entire episode.
The notion that ever somehow became the children's show.
Yeah. Boy, it's a shame that as you warned us, out of context, not funny at all.
Well, I was afraid. I gave a little more, but like that's why I love the writers of that show so much.
All right, well, just ahead, we're going to enlist the help of a bona fide expert in the topic to test your mastery with an expert-level question worth up to 3 points. But before that, to give you a chance to show off, here are your 5 trivia questions about the topic, each worth 1 point.
Can't wait
if
to
you want
them all.
It, you get 2 hints for the 5 questions, or you can just resign now, apparently.
Oh,
what's happening.
This is,
you okay?
Oh, so wide.
All right, now, Shashir, do listen closely because you can steal if Sam gets anything wrong. Shashir, how much do you know about The Simpsons, seasons 3 through 9?
Not a lot.
Okay. there's that Keely. She came out a little bit. All right, here's question number one, Sam.
Yeah.
The Simpsons is known for a cavalcade of famous guest stars, but perhaps the most famous one appeared in the first episode of season 3, voicing a mental patient who sings a song for Lisa's birthday. He was billed as John J. Smith, but what pop icon was it really?
That would be Michael Jackson.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. Yeah.
In fact, because he wanted to be billed as John J. Smith, and they got so many questions afterward, the Simpsons changed their rules afterward and said any famous guest star must be billed by their real name after that.
Well, I'm glad I chose two fun facts because I had that. The other one I was going to tell you.
Wow.
The other one I was going to tell you is that Michael Jackson provided the speaking voice for the character, but his song was sung by a sound-alike.
Yeah.
He did not sing the song.
That's right.
All right, you know your stuff. Here's question number two. Season 6 ended in a cliffhanger with the episode Who Shot Mr. Burns Part 1, and the answer was revealed when Season 7 opened with the episode Who Shot Mr. Burns Part 2. So, Sam, who shot Mr. Burns?
Maggie Simpson.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. It was Maggie. Fun fact, Fox held a contest where people could guess who shot Mr. Burns, and none of the eligible players guessed correctly, so a winner was chosen at random.
I know, I entered that contest.
Yeah. Which, by the way, that might be how our game ends tonight. We'll see. We're running a little long. You're 2 for 2. Here's question number 3. Season 5 featured the 100th episode of the series and the first time that Superintendent Chalmers yells what catchphrase?
Skinner!
Ellen?
That is correct.
That is correct.
Wow.
Can we give him a bonus point for the act out?
And that's Super Nintendo Chalmers, if you're
Ralph.
Yeah,
that's one of my favorite lines also. One of my favorites. Mmm, steamed hams. all right, you're free for 3. You have not used a hint. Here's question number 4. Season 3 was a pivotal season for the series, as the original showrunners, Matt Groening, James L. Brooks, and Sam Simon, were replaced in those roles. Name the two people who took over as showrunner.
Is it Al Jean and Mike Reese?
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. Not sure if it's Reese or Rice, but
yeah,
we'll
give
it
either.
To you. Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Here's question number 5. For seasons 8 and 9, The Simpsons won Emmys for Outstanding Music and Lyrics, their only awards in this category to date. Name either of the songs that won the Emmy.
I will need a hint on this.
Helen, how about that first hint?
One of them is about prostitutes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's a family show on Sunday nights.
Yep.
Is this my... So can I get a second hint?
There is no...
I only get the one hint.
I can give you a bonus hint.
Sure.
The other song is not.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I could sing the song.
Hopefully that won't throw you off.
I just learned this place existed.
You know the song.
I do. It's about the brothel and don't take the S out of Springfield.
Don't take the S out of Springfield. Helen, is that correct?
That is not correct.
Not correct. So she with a chance to steal.
Hoes be hoeing.
There you go.
If that wasn't a song, it's going to be very soon. Helen, is it Hoes be hoeing?
It is not Hoes be hoeing.
No, Sam, you did know the song. The title, I believe, is said later in the song. It's We Put the Spring in Springfield.
We put the spring in Springfield.
The other one was You're Checking In. Was from season 9. All right, still, you did very well in that round. But now here is your expert level question that requires multiple answers. It is time for your cluster fact.
Okay.
Oh, you guys are so good at that.
Yeah. We'll be bringing on an expert to assess your response. Correct answer is worth up to 3 points. In 2003 and in 2014, Entertainment Weekly said the 17th episode of Season 4 was the greatest episode of The Simpsons of all time. In 2017, the website The Ringer agreed, and in 2018, The Wrap also said it was the best ever. The episode, called Last Exit to Springfield, centers around Homer becoming a union leader at the power plant. For up to 3 points, what health benefit does Homer successfully negotiate to keep for the workers? How does a monkey at a typewriter mess up a famous line from Charles Dickens? And name one of the two people credited with writing the episode.
Homer negotiates a dental plan.
Mm-hmm.
The monkey screws up by writing, it was the best of times, it was the blurst of times.
Okay.
And two of the people credited.
Yeah, one of the two.
One of the two. John Vitti.
John Vitti. All right, Helen is taking note of those answers. We have an expert on hand who can tell us for sure. Helen, who do we have tonight?
Here with us tonight is an Emmy Award-winning writer and producer whose credits include Malcolm in the Middle, Frasier, and the first four seasons of The Simpsons. It's Jay Kogan.
Jay Kogan, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh. I'm so sorry, I didn't know it was
you. Wow.
Jay and Sam shaking hands. Hello, Jay. Welcome to the show.
Jay Keith Van Stratton. May I call you Jay Keith Van?
No.
Okay.
No.
I have a question.
Yes.
Why couldn't I have done this by telephone?
You're not in New York? Because you wouldn't have had the chance to have the warm handshake and embrace of your friend whom you know, Sam Levine. You guys know each other.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Although that is pretty easy to get.
So, Jay, how is it that you two know each other?
Well, we know each other several different ways. One, the first way we know each other is The Stump, I believe. You were a member of, I had an online group called The Stump, which you are familiar with, mm-hmm. I believe. And it was an exclusive, very exclusive group of comedians, writers, actors, and anybody who wanted to join.
That's how I got in.
And then later on, we played poker together.
This is true.
So I'm part of two of his favorite.
You could have been the other
bases.
Expert as
yes,
well.
Exactly.
Interesting. Now, when I first asked you about coming on the show as our expert in The Simpsons from this time, you told me that you would not be good because you don't remember anything that happened then.
100% true.
Okay. Yeah.
No, it's 1,000 years ago.
For you, was it just another gig?
No, I loved it. It was fantastic. It was great. But we wrote 1,000,000 episodes, a million jokes, and you asked her what is her favorite musical guest. There's 1,000,000 musical guests on Saturday Night Live. There's 1,000,000 jokes on The Simpsons, and it's just hard to keep that much brain matter when you're trying to write other things and do other things and raise a family. And
so you don't have an Adele in your... in your Simpsons life?
I don't. We tried to get Adele, and we couldn't get her.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
right.
No, we don't have an Adele. No, right. But I was there for Michael Jackson, so that was good.
Yeah, what was that like?
He was weird.
Really?
Yeah, he was very weird. He's very...
We are breaking more news here on Go Factor.
He wore orange pancake makeup, and his one request was... he also didn't want to sing his own song, which was weird. Huh. He sat across the table to another great singer named Kip Lennon, who sang his music. And he also, his one request was in the basement of the 20th Century Fox when we recorded it, he wanted 40 room heaters and 30 cases of Evian water.
Wow.
No. And he never went in there.
Oh, it's too bad. We could use those tonight. Yeah.
Wow.
That's terrific. Now, The Simpsons started on the Tracy Ullman Show, which is where you won your first Emmy.
That's right.
How involved were you in The Simpsons being moved to its own independent show?
I was involved. When Sam Simon and Matt Groening and Jim Brooks wanted to do a show, they sort of talked about it. And my writing partner at the time, Wallace Wolodarski, and I were like the first writers. They said, "You want to write an episode?" And we said, "Sure." And we just started talking about the show before it even existed.
Wow.
So that was fun. We were there. It didn't get the money, but we were there.
You were there. Yeah. Well, you did get the money eventually and some Emmys. Why did you want to work with a partner? There were some that worked in teams and some that worked solo.
Why did I want to work with a partner?
Yeah, why did you work with a partner instead of writing on your own?
Well, we were high school buddies, and we thought things were good. But also, when you work with a partner, shows like that, because they get two people for the price of one.
Right?
It's cheaper.
No, I understand why they wanted you to work as a partner,
yeah.
But why
so
did
I
you
wanted
work?
To work, so yeah. Having a partner got me more
got
jobs, that
okay.
Kind of stuff.
Terrific.
And then when I got successful enough, I dropped that guy.
Yeah. That's what I'm afraid Helen's going to do. Episodes are written and produced far in advance, so... when do you realize that this is catching on and might run for 30 years?
When it premiered.
Yeah.
I mean, the day it premiered, which was like Christmas in 1989, I think.
Simpsons roasting on an open fire.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that was our show 7. That wasn't our pilot. It was show 7. And they just said, well, we'll put the Christmas show on first. And it got amazing acknowledgement immediately.
Wow.
And almost... It was like Star Wars kind of thing. It caught fire, and people were going Simpsons crazy immediately. And pretty soon, within weeks, people were selling Simpsons T-shirts off the sides of freeways.
Right.
I mean, literally, it was the weirdest thing, you know, I'd been a part of. I think I don't think that'll happen again.
Now, we talked about this episode, Last Exit to Springfield. We'll get to the game portion in a second.
The greatest episode of all time.
Well, that
except
was...
not according to this guy. Yeah. No, that's fine.
I didn't say what I thought was the greatest. I said what was my favorite. Those
all
are
right.
Different.
Do you remember writing that specific episode or anything
I do.
About it?
I do.
Okay,
it was very,
tell us about that.
Will we... At the beginning of every season, we would go into a retreat and we'd try to pitch a bunch of ideas. And this particular time, we decided to pitch a union show. I think we had just had a writer strike pretty recently. And so the Simpsons decided we should do our own union show. And then Wally and I pitched the idea that Homer becomes the union president. And Jim Brooks and Sam Simon said, yeah, okay, they'd do that. And so we wrote an outline, and you know, when you write a script for The Simpsons, it's not just you, it's the 12 other guys all pitching and making jokes and making things better and better. And so it's we wrote the outline and the draft, but it got much better from everybody else's input.
Mm. Terrific. Let's get to the reason that we brought you here tonight. As far as our game goes, you heard the questions that we asked Sam. First, we wanted to know what was the health benefit that Homer successfully negotiated to keep for the workers in that episode. Helen, what did Sam say?
Sam said dental plan.
And Jay?
The answer is dental plan.
Lisa needs braces.
Dental plan.
Lisa needs braces.
Dental plan.
Did you write that back and forth?
Yes. As a matter of fact,
awesome.
It went back and forth on the page. It went several different pages of him going back and forth. And the showrunner at the time, I think it was Sam Simon, said, this is crazy. We can't do this.
Yeah.
And then the other writers fought for it.
Oh, that's
and
great.
So it was great, and we finally got it in.
It's an iconic line from that show. All right, next we wanted to know, how does a monkey at a typewriter mess up a famous line from Charles Dickens? Helen, what did Sam say?
Sam said, it was the best of times, it was the blurst of times.
And I believe we have an audio clip to determine whether he was correct or not. Let's listen to what it was actually said.
It was the best of times, it was the blurst of times, you stupid monkey!
So, Jay?
Yeah. That is correct.
That is correct. Another point for Sam. Yeah. Where did that line come from, if you remember?
I'm a big fan of Tale of Two Cities.
Okay.
And it's pretty famous.
Yeah.
And I figured, let's do that.
Okay.
So that was those two jokes so far are my jokes, so I'm very happy
right,
you picked
awesome.
Two jokes that were mine.
All right, and finally we wanted Sam to name one of the two people credited with writing the episode. Helen, what did Sam say?
Sam said John Vitti.
And Jay Cohen, is that correct?
He is wrong.
Oh.
He's wrong. There are two people who wrote that episode, credited writers.
Yeah.
One is Wallace Wolodarski, and the other one is your very good friend, Jay Cogan.
I'm such a bad friend.
Go fact yourself.
I will. I will. I've literally been sitting here next to you thinking about all the other great jokes in that episode and laughing at them silently. Mm-hmm.
That's the way I like people to do.
Yes. That's awesome. And what are you up to these days, Jay?
I am the ACLU ambassador for snacks.
Oh.
Yeah. So I'm doing that
Important
really well.
Work.
A
Important
lot of the good work. Ones were taken.
Yeah.
I'm writing pilots and stuff and working on TV shows and all that stuff and just raking in the Simpsons money.
As you should.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's the way
yeah.
it goes.
And if people want to find out more about you or your work, where can they do that?
At the bar. Right down there.
Excellent. There. I'm, making use of the brewery.
Yeah, find me online. You can find me anywhere. But I'm writing some pilots and stuff. It's
awesome.
Really easy.
We're super happy that you joined us. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks
Jay Cogan,
me.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Wow.
Helen, let's get a score recap as we go into our final round.
At the end of that round, Sasheer Zamata has 5 points and Sam Levine has 7 points.
All right, now it is time for our final round we call Fast Facts. I'm going to read 10 statements and each contestant will answer with true or false. I'll start with Sasheer and alternate between each guest. Each correct answer is worth 1 point. This will determine the winner. Again, the answer to each statement is true or false. Here we begin. Sasheer, the phrase, do not pass go, do not collect $200, comes from the game Monopoly.
True.
Correct.
Sam, the properties in Monopoly were originally based on streets in Los Angeles.
False.
Correct.
That's right, it's Atlantic City. Sasheer, Monopoly was a game from Parker Brothers.
True.
Correct.
Yep. Sam, Parker Brothers was founded by a man named Parker.
Is it first name or last name?
Either.
True.
Correct.
That's right. It was George Parker, in fact. Sasheer, George Parker didn't actually have a brother.
True.
Incorrect.
He actually ran the company with two of his brothers. Sam, Parker Brothers was once owned by Lego.
False.
Correct.
Sasheer, Parker Brothers was once owned by General Mills.
False.
Incorrect.
No, it really was. Isn't that weird? You get Monopoly cereal or something. Sam, Parker Brothers is now owned by Hasbro.
True.
Correct.
That's right. Technically, the brand doesn't exist anymore, but Hasbro did buy them. Sasheer, Hasbro made a version of the Game of Life for millennials where they have to deal with insurmountable debt.
Deaths?
Debt.
Oh, debt.
Debt. I would say most deaths are insurmountable.
False.
Incorrect.
No, they really did. Sam, also in that game, players can drop their cell phone in a toilet.
False.
Incorrect.
No, they really have a game like that. Sashir, and finally Sashir, but their parents are just going to pay for a new one anyway.
Oh, is this the question?
It's kind of fake, but it doesn't matter.
True.
Yeah, of course they are. Let's give a nice hand to Sashir Tomato and Sam Levine. While Helen tallies the final score. Helen, are you ready to reveal the winner of tonight's episode?
I am. At the end of the game, Sashir Zameda has 7 points and Sam Levine has 11 points.
Congratulations, Sam. You are the facting champion on Go Fact Yourself. Shaking hands like gracious sports they are. Sam, what will you do with your championship?
I'm going to get wasted.
Sweet.
We're at a brewery.
That's the idea.
Drink responsibly if you're not Sam.
No.
That just leaves plugs. Want to give everyone a chance to promote any upcoming products, appearances, or services? Sashir, where can people find you?
My website is sashir.com. All my social media is at The Sheer Truth, T-H-E, Sheer Truth. And, yeah, you'll see all my lists of shows. I tweet stuff. Yeah. Just find me. Oh, I have a special on Amazon Prime called Pizza Mind. It's also on Stars on Demand. And you also get the album, the audio version, on Spotify and Apple. Yeah, and like my stuff.
Yeah, I'm so happy to meet you and so happy you joined us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Sam Levine, where can people find you?
You can find me on the Twitters and the Instagrams at Sam Levine, S-A-M-M, two M's, L-E-V-I-N-E. And if you're a giant geek like I am, you should get yourself a subscription to DC Universe, which is a new streaming platform, and I am one of the hosts of DC Daily, which you can find every day on DC Universe. And I don't know, I'll be at the bar.
He'll be at the bar. Sam Levine, ladies and gentlemen. You lucky, lucky people are so lucky because your host is Miss Helen Hong.
Hey.
What do you have going on, my friend?
Please follow me on the socials at Funny Helen Hong. At Funny Helen Hong, because the other one's not funny.
No.
I'm the funny one.
Helen Hong, ladies and gentlemen. And me, you can find me on Twitter at J_Keith and on Instagram at jkeith.net, all spelled out. That just leaves me to thank Sam Levine, Sashir Zameda, Kat Thomas, Jay Kogan, Helen Hong. Please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, all at GoFactorPod, and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. I'm J. Keith Van Stratton. Good night. Like what you hear, come see us live. It's free. Go to GoFactorPod.com for our schedule and tickets. And give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts like Just Joe 42 did. He, she, or they said, I love this show so much. Aw, we love it too. Thanks, Just Joe 42. Helen?
Go Fact Yourself is a panel quiz program devised by Jim Newman and J. Keith Van Stratton and comes to you via transcription from the Angel City Brewery in downtown Los Angeles. Questions on Go Fact Yourself were compiled by the Trivia Industrial Complex. It is produced in collaboration with Maximum Fun. Go Fact Yourself's theme song and incidental music were written and performed by Jonathan Green. Maximum Fun's senior producer is Laura Swisher. The show is edited by Julian Burrell. Dave McKeever is our live sound engineer. Special thanks to Mark Edward Hoyt, Clint Tauscher, Leora Saul, Dave Bianchi, Hal Miller, and Christine Velada. I've been Helen Hong.
Let's watch Sam get drunk. Hey, this is Jay Keith again. On our next episode of Go Fact Yourself, Greg Fitzsimmons talks about Mustangs, sort of.
There was a janitor at my high school that was selling a 71 Mustang.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And so he drove with me. And then the next day, I went on my own and took it for another test drive with two of my friends, and we bought an 8-pack, and we enjoyed it. Because how do you really know if you love a car?
Yeah, that's true. And Sean Pilofsky reminds us when she met Bette Midler.
And I said, Miss Midler, my name is Sean Pilofsky, and I like she cared. And I said, and I'd like to tell you. Yeah. And then my decibel of my voice started to raise, and I was like, and in my eyes, you're a god. And I saw the security, like, short Jewish girl stalking Bette Midler, and it got really quiet. And then she just, with grace, she turned to me and she said, goddess, honey, goddess. And then she turned back around and carried her conversation.
Wow.
Like a professional.
Nice. That's Go Fact Yourself, dropping Friday, March 1st here at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get podcasts.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.